Welcome back, people. It's your boy Amante. You're listening to the True Tone Show, where I interview people in their truth and have conversation in tone. I got a good one today. I have writer, actor, director, Richie Kamchoon. He fights to bring funny and blackness to TV, and it's super refreshing. I can't wait to talk to Richie. I got Richie here. Richie, how you doing today, sir?
I'm doing well. How's it going, Amante?
I'm good. First of all, I was reading the magazine, okay? This is how I found you. I found you reading a magazine. I don't know if you know that you're in a magazine. Do you know that? Do you know you're in a magazine?
Was it Edition?
Yes. Hey, man. Congrats.
Thank you. Yeah, that was like a kind of like a side mission that I went on. I haven't been like freelance journaling in a long time. But, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I don't know if you saw the artist that I interviewed, LaRussell. He's obviously doing so well out here. So it was a pleasure to get to speak to him.
Yeah, that was, first of all, I was so interested in finding things like that. You can get little nuggets. Look at me giving out my goodies. I can't give it out for free because people would definitely take your little tricks that you got. But I saw the article and I was like, yo, I got to get this guy. But it was the little snippet where it talks about you taking risk and you doing your private adventures. And we'll get into that a little bit. But I was so impressed. First of all, the magazine's beautiful. They do a great job with it. And
yeah,
you know, me personally, I don't think magazines are dead at all. I just think people read them on their own cadence or whatever. But that's a big feeling though, right? That's a big deal to be in a magazine and to have a snippet. Were you nervous?
I was, man. I'm not even going to lie to you. Not with the writing portion. In college, I studied digital media and particularly took a liking to journalism. Mm-hmm. And I interned at a magazine called RVA Mag way back when.
Yeah, yeah. You interviewed Chance. Well, you did a piece on Chance, right?
I did a piece on, yeah. I used to do a lot of reviews. Chance was one of the artists, Anderson Paak, artists like that. Didn't get to personally speak to these artists, but I was used to talking about the music, talking about the artistry. So I would say the difference was getting essentially an unfiltered hour with an artist up close, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of the times I might be at a show and I can review their showmanship or the performance. But getting to talk to an artist, I've talked to artists before, but an artist of that stature that also I admire to that degree was definitely a new experience. And not to mention, I haven't been a quote unquote journalist in years. You know, the last thing I wrote, I think, was that Chance review 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so it was I kind of had to dust off the pen in a sense. And yeah, I was nervous to talk to LaRussell, but after a little while, I kind of eased in, and he's a normal guy. So we really just talked about, you know, his influences and really what he's doing. That was the whole theme of Edition's summer issue was, you know, people that are on the forefront of tech and innovation. And if you know anything about LaRussell, then you know that he's right at the forefront of that. So
yeah, he's not afraid.
I honestly looked at it. Yeah, not afraid at all. And he's really kind of reinventing the industry. And so for me, it was just great to get an opportunity to simultaneously pick his brain and get to interview him for the magazine. So once the nerves were off, man, it was.
Yeah. I was about to ask you, how do you, cause you're doing a lot of stuff in general and you're going to be, you are, and are going to be that for someone, you know? So how do you, how do you control that feeling? Cause it is hard. Sometimes it's like, you're trying to control your nerves. Like, what is your technique to control your nerves when you're in that moment?
Well, I think about the fact that for me, I looked up a bunch of LaRussell interviews prior to going to interview him. And, you know, you and with any artist, right, that you take a liking to, you start to dig into their interviews, you'll notice a lot of interviewers ask the same questions.
Yeah.
And so for me, really the nervousness was, how do I approach this differently? And once I saw his initial responses were like, oh, that's a good question, or I hadn't thought about that, right? Like, I asked him about the Disney parallel that he always makes to his home foundation, which he calls the Pergola. It's his home venue that he performs at, and he wants to build it like Disney built up Disney World and Disneyland.
Yeah, I've heard him talk about that.
And I made that connection. Yeah, I made that, and he's talked about it before, but I don't think any interviewer really probed it. And so I kind of probed that and like asked him where that came from and things of that nature. And I saw him, you know, actually giving it a lot of thought. And so once I saw that I was asking, I think, compelling questions, that wore off the nerves of just like, do a decent job at this interview. And again, his personality made it feel like I was talking to you or someone else, you know. And so like that I would have a good rapport with, because it was easy. It didn't feel like I was, I don't know, interviewing a politician or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
But
like,
do you know, Richie, do you think a lot of that has to do with, because he's so reliant on outside forces besides, you know, the namesakes, the brands, the record labels, you know what I mean? Like, he has to mm-hmm. build authentic connection. He can't, you know what I mean? When you do it right. by yourself, when you're an independent artist, right? Which he's, you know, stands on a box and talks about it a lot. And don't you think that's the part of it? You can't have these bad encounters with people because word of mouth is so important at that level. Do you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
Versus, you know, relying on a record label that can just stream you in Times Square. You know, they can get you these big platforms. So necessarily you don't have to be nice to everyone. And not saying you shouldn't be a bad person in general, just because you don't know what someone could do for you in general, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I just wanted to congratulate you on that. That was real beautiful.
Thank you, man.
You know, I love seeing, I try not to, you know, the word blackness is starting to feel tacky. You know what I mean? Like, because we're using it so much. But I really love,
like a catch-all.
Yeah. I really love seeing people be successful. And I just love seeing you get a shout out as a writer. And I was like, okay, I started watching some of the stuff you were doing. I want to talk about, obviously, you got a lot of projects. We might not be able to hit on all of them, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. When you got so many projects, it's a good thing. It means you're working. It means you're a professional, which is beautiful, right? So one thing that I noticed that is symmetry through your work is your work has soul. And what I mean by that is when you're trying to create something, it's hard to simulate personality, which is why you see with certain actors, man, this don't look that good because it doesn't have personality. The actor didn't give it the character personship. Right. But your work, you know, Night School, Mondays, it has a soul. It has its own entity. Like, it can live by itself. And I just really was so impressed by that. And do you get what I'm saying by that?
Yeah. One, thank you for the compliment. I really appreciate that. I think that's, I hadn't ever really thought about the work in that way of like having soul. But I think it really resonates with me because that is kind of the deciding factor for me when I feel like something is not only ready, but a story that I want to tell, right? Because I'm one of those people that thinks there's no new idea, right? Everything under the sun has been thought of. Mm-hmm. But what are you going to bring to it, right? So it's typically your voice. You know, like, what voice am I going to bring to this workplace comedy or this absurdist, you know, ragtag group of misfits Night School show, right? Yeah. Like, it has to be my voice in particular because, again, these ideas aren't necessarily new or other people can execute it, but they won't be able to execute it in the way that I would or myself and my collaborators would. So I think that's the main thing that I try to come from. And within that voice, I think about the people that are inhabiting these worlds, right? And so with Night School, it's not just the fact that we got this group of misfits. We try to humanize them and make them three-dimensional and just give them that particular trait that, you know, that accentuates them. And the same thing with Mondays. You know, Mondays is a little bit more personal of a story for me, because I wrote that one solely by myself. But at the same time, I was trying to add as much of myself and the surrounding world to each character. And each character had to be singular in that way. And, you know, I did my best at that, I think. And so I think that's the main thing. It's just establishing my voice and choices that I don't think any other storyteller would make. I think about that a lot. I'm like, okay, what is something that only I can bring to this? Because that's truly why I tell stories. You want to be as singular as a voice and an artist as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think within that, you get that soul that you're talking about. But I think that would show up in other people's work. You know, I think it just maybe resonated with you more again, because like you said, even though the word blackness, like you said, could be a little Saki at this point. It resonates a little differently when you see black artists on screen in a real way that doesn't feel tropey. Yeah. And that's the thing that inspired me. Like I said it, I think publicly before, but if not, this might be the first on record thing. My two biggest influences to want to start to screenwrite was Atlanta and Insecure. It came out in the same fall of 2016, and it literally hit me like a ton of bricks. I had never seen anything like that. And so, yeah.
Richie, so there's a lot there. And my question for you is, how did you, first of all, let's strip down the idea of going on your own, which in itself is its own thing. And I don't blow smoke up no one's pipes, okay? It's hard to do your own thing, right? It's very difficult. Sure. I heard you talking about being able to problem solve with no excuses. And I thought that was really important too, about the night school is in a school, right? It's in a classroom, the setting. Yes. There's no, this, you could buy, if I was SNL or something, you could buy this and plug it right in. There's no drop off. There's no feeling of like,
that's what we were trying to make, man.
No, but yeah, like, but do you know how hard that is? Like,
trying to make things that
I don't think people don't realize like how hard that is. Like, this isn't someone who just woke up one day and was like, let me use this camera that's in my closet and film something. This is someone who took time, actually put out some good product, and it's beautiful work. And on top of that, it's funny. Like, one of my favorite episodes is the episodes of the roast boy. Like, he's like reading, but he can't read. And then he starts roasting he just, he goes too long. And he's just like, you're like, man, come on. He's like, man, if you would have spent that much time learning how to read, you'd be good. We could have been done already. Like,
right. I don't know if you, have you seen Mondays all the way through?
Not all of Mondays. I caught a lot of it.
I don't want to spoil it then, but there's some callbacks from the month, like connecting that. That's one of the scenes where, again, I don't want to spoil it, but there's a connection, a larger connection there with that roasting scene. So like a lot of those people, like we worked on Mondays or other short film projects. For night school. And so by that time, I think kind of what you're saying in terms of, oh, you could just drop this into SNL or anything else. We really like I want to shout out the people I created the show with, my good friends, Sherwin Santos and Casey Lawrence. You might know them as Lena Cuisine. But yeah, when we conceived the show, that's our standard. You know, we want to make stuff that you can watch this on TV. It shouldn't feel like a YouTube web series. Mm-hmm. And so already building up with not only people that I have a collaborative connection with, but also the crew, you know, a lot of those crew are people that we've worked with, even like the extras, you know, we try to create as much of a family atmosphere as possible. And then we just hold ourselves to a high standard, not a high standard in terms of this has to be a festival or award-winning thing, but are we proud to have put our names on this? And I don't think myself, any of the people that I work with, I don't think we want to work on stuff if we don't feel proud to put our names on things. Mm-hmm. And so the byproduct of that is hopefully something that is quality enough, to your point, to be on like an SNL or something. And we recognize it's not easy, but if you hold yourself to a standard and you like the people that you're collaborating with, it's very much possible. And, you know, I think now that we've done it a couple of times, it's starting to become rinse and repeat, and we don't even think about it, which is the best part. You know, you're just like, okay, what's the next idea?
Yeah. I heard the actor from Snowfall who plays Franklin say that he would take a significant pay cut to do projects with people he loved, his best friends or stuff. So I definitely heard that, and I kind of felt that from what you were saying. Let me ask you this then. So when you are working on a project, is it easier for egos to die while you're trying to produce something like this? And on top of that, talk about how pieces fall into place when you're doing something. So like, you know how you have an idea and you don't know where those people are going to come from. Sometimes you work really hard to try to get those people, but then there's times where things just fall into place and you got to use what you have around you to build whatever you're trying to build right now.
Yeah. So to the first part of your question, in terms of like the managing the ego part or whatever the case may be, I think naturally everyone wants to do a thing, right? Like you're like, I want to be an actor. I want to be a writer. I want to be a director, whatever the case may be. And everyone arrives to a collaborative space already having their own journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the Sherwin, who was the director of the project, he also wrote an episode. He directed a ton of stuff before. He even co-directed the show Monday. Lean and Cuisine, Casey, were you familiar with Lean and Cuisine before?
No, I had no idea until I saw Night School, and then I was like,
okay, yeah. No worries. The only reason I said that was because, if you were to go down his YouTube, he's been putting out videos for years, right? He's been mm-hmm. putting out videos for like 8 years. And then with me, I wrote Mondays. I also write for a living. And so I think we each came from it from a mutual respect of like, okay, we're collaborating on this project and each kind of know our roles, right? Lean was going to not only just contribute to the writing, but he was going to star on the show. Mm-hmm. Sherwin was going to direct the show, and I was going to kind of come at it as the lead writer, right? And so we each kind of respected our roles in that sense. And so once you have that respect factor, it's a lot easier to collaborate. I think when, you know, luckily I haven't been in a situation where I haven't respected my collaborators, but I would imagine I'd be much more hesitant to trust in their ideas if I didn't respect where they were coming from. We already all respected each other. And as the three co-creators of the show, you know, we kind of just worked in unison in that way. And everybody else kind of followed too, right? They're all taking direction from us. And we deferred when need be. Like if I felt like, oh, okay, I like what Sherwin's doing with this. Or no, let's trust Lean in this scene because he has like that instinct as the lead actor, right? Or even for me, if they came back to me like, we don't like the ending. Like, what do you think? And I would like rewrite a scene. You know, they trusted me in that way. And so it starts from a place of trust. To answer your first question. And I think the second, sorry, actually, could you repeat that? The second part of that question?
I was asking you how do you trust people you work with? And then what is the inclination that these things are going to work out and letting people do their roles? You know what I mean? So trusting that they're going to work out and then letting them do their roles.
Yeah. I mean, again, if you don't, you know, you try to vet people as much as possible. And a lot of that is trial and error. You know, I've worked with people in the past. I know Sherwin has, I know Lean has. Everyone that's worked on that set has probably worked in a film production space in some capacity. And, you know, I don't want to disparage anybody, but at a certain point, you're like, I probably wouldn't work with that person again. You know, and so by the time you get to something like Night School, you're like, I've vetted a lot of these people. I like working with a lot of these people. You believe they're good at what they do. And even if you haven't worked with them before, they likely have been recommended by somebody you trust, right? So even if I haven't worked with DP, Sherwin, or maybe one of our producers might say, oh man, you know, this guy's good, trust me. And it's because they know that we don't want anyone around that we don't trust or that we don't, mm-hmm. you know, have a certain vibe with. And so you start to eventually build up such a trust in your collaborators that you feel like you can turn your back in a sense and everything behind you is going to be good. Like, they'll take care of my blind spots in a way. And so once you build that, I think that's when you get the synergy that, you know, hopefully we created on set that shows up on the screen. I truly believe that stuff shows up on the screen, all the process of it, the producing aspect, the onset aspect, all of that kind of works like a well-oiled machine to become what you then see in these six episodes.
So Ryan Coogler, Jordan Peele, mm-hmm. and most recently mm-hmm. Jewel Taylor, and he yep. created the movie They Clone Tyrone. You got Quintina yep. Brunson at Abbott Elementary. What do you think of when you hear those names?
Man, I think of trailblazers. I think of people, again, who have their own voice. You know, Ryan Coogler, Jewel Taylor, Quintina Brunson, Issa Don, all these voices that happen to be black, they're, you know, we're all a part of the diaspora, but we're all expressing it differently, right?
Mm-hmm.
You might see similarities, but each of us has our own singular point of view, and I respect that so much. And not to mention all the people you named, they really grinded, you know, they really they really made something of themselves, right? Yeah. Like whether it came from YouTube or whether they're like Ryan Coogler, I think played football in college mm-hmm. and then he went to USC film school.
Yeah.
And, you know, so all these people, quote unquote, got it out the mud. And
you know why I picked them,
all
right?
All of them.
You know why?
Why in particular?
I picked them regardless, even though people may think just because Ryan worked with Disney, they all mm-hmm. did it on their own. They all pulled from a different source. They all said, you know, they all said, I'm going to go out and start my own project. Because people don't forget about Ryan Coogler's first project. They don't talk about that. They don't talk about the risks he took with, you know, Michael B. Jordan. You know, people don't talk about those things. People don't talk about Jordan Peele. Yeah. They stuck him in the funny guy lane. Like, oh, he's just funny. He can't do nothing serious or scary. Mm-hmm. And then he got out of it. And, you know, even with most recently Taylor, like he talks about all the time about people overlooking him, not giving him a shot. And then eventually coming up with They Clone Tyrone, which I think... It's going to get, I'm going to say it out there. I wanted to say things too soon, but it has a classic feel to it. It has a very unique, fresh.
Absolutely.
We needed that. It's like, dang, it was like, finally, I'm sick of all these repeat shows and stuff. And then obviously with Abbott Elementary, the beautifulness that she's been able to acquire and giving back to that community, that's fresh too. It's unique. Like, I don't really hear about shows saying we're going to give our money to the school district in Detroit to give back. That's beautiful. And
huge inspiration, man. Huge inspiration.
When I saw your projects,
art should be a vehicle for stuff like that.
When I saw your projects, I saw this same vein of like, you got to have some risk. You got to take some risk on your own. You got to say, well, if this project means this much to me, I'm willing to jump the fence to see if it has legs. And that is what I was like, okay, I could see this with him and them. Like, I could see that, like, you know, getting to that potential. But yeah, they do a great job, you know. So you talk a lot about Insecure as well. What about the show do you feel like you've pulled your inspiration from? Is it more of a personal side, or is it the creative side, or is it just you have this beautiful love for it, so then you try to imitate in your own way?
A little bit of all of that, right? Like, you got to also the context of when I arrived at the show. Issa Rae had already been building up her name for years, but I missed that whole wave. Again, I've always had an interest in movies and TV, but I never thought I was going to pursue a career in them, you know? And so it wasn't until, just to give you a little bit more context, I'm 20, 21 at the time around then, in 2016. And you also have to think the market for, you know, black voices in particular, up until that point, there was kind of like a dearth of really, I think personally, compelling, unique voices that felt to me real in a way. It didn't feel like a caricature or a trope, you know, not to name any names, but a lot of the stuff we've been getting for a while felt like that.
Yeah.
So when I watched, again, Insecure and Atlanta, it was like the tandem of the two, almost in like, it was weird, like the duality of it, right? You have this one grittier show in Atlanta, and then you have this more sunny show in California. And I just remember thinking, oh, that's how I talk. These are some of the conversations that I have. These are some of the things that I might deal with, you know? So it hit me right at the age where I needed it to hit me, and within the context of the TV landscape. And then just for Insecure in particular, I really love the way they highlight, you know, they color black skin, right? It feels full. It feels vibrant. It feels.
You mean like the shots they take? You mean like the actual?
Like the cinematography. Yeah. Okay. You know, because a lot of BTs and stuff like that. Even photographers now, if you'll look up a cover and it's on like Rolling Stones, a lot of times you'll see on Twitter, or I guess it's called X now, people will be complaining about, oh man, they made such and such look flat, right?
Because
they're not coloring us right, right? And so I just really loved the way they captured us, and it always felt intimate, and it always felt real, you know? And so that was the main influence that I got. You know, my story's not going to be particular to how Insecure is telling their story, but it has to give me that same feeling. I'm a feeling artist. Like, if something doesn't give me a feeling, then
you're
I really
soul
shy
artist.
Away from it. Yeah. So, yeah, like you said, a soul artist. So I try to capture whatever the feeling I'm looking for as much as possible, and that's directly because of the influences that gave me a feeling. So I would say that's the main influence I got from Insecure, is just like capturing that feeling of, you know, the feeling they were trying to capture is SoCal, Southern California, millennials, black people going through everyday life. And so, and then I think they did that perfectly. And so I try to do that the same in the work that I do.
I like that you know, even though Atlanta and Insecure kind of seem same, They're very different. Mm-hmm. And anybody who's ever been to Atlanta, because I used to live in Atlanta, I was like, this is Atlanta, 100%. The randomness, the encounters, the funny people, the weird things that those people do, it definitely speaks for that. So are you all current on all the episodes of Atlanta?
Yeah, I've finished the whole show.
So okay, I'm gonna jump. I think this was like what, season three, the Teddy Tendergraf episode. That was
Teddy Perkins.
Yeah. Oh, I said it wrong. Damn, Teddy Perkins.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the craziest. I still itch thinking about it.
On a different level, though. that's when I knew that show, because that Atlanta is like, personally, again, it's huge inspiration, but it's in my, I think it's objectively one of the 10, if not 5, greatest TV shows ever. And I knew, once I saw Teddy Perkins, I was like, okay, this show, not only do they play by their own rules, but they're operating at a level of visual audio storytelling that a lot of people don't get to. You know, because I agree with you, man. Like, my jaw was on the floor when I first watched that episode. And it's just a masterclass in suspense, thematic buildup, subtext, acting. Like, the acting was great. Cinematography. I mean, it's just, they rolling. I think, it's probably, you could argue it's the best episode of Atlanta. You know, you could argue it's a great episode.
They had the more recent ones that were more complex, that deal more into like characters and their mental health. Those ones are really, though, I felt like either it was going to hit or it was going to go over a lot of people's head, because most people don't like digging under surface level. And I felt like Atlanta was trying to do a lot, which was fine. You know, you never know if you're going to get another opportunity, so why not swing hard?
Absolutely.
But the thing that I love about the show, which I also feel like people notice, is like, it's kind of like a own thing. It's like, a lot of people don't know about it, but a lot of people know about it, which is like weird, because I find, I'm like, you never seen Atlanta? They be like, no, what's that? I'm like, what? You better go watch that. It's like church.
No, I mean, but that's the best part of the show. Whenever you arrive to the show, it's gonna, you know, it's gonna open up your mind. It's gonna blow you away, whichever. Because I remember when they were first premiering the show way back when, and they were doing interviews about it. I think it was Donald Glover or maybe Hiro Murai, the director. They were saying that they were really inspired by Twin Peaks. They were like, oh, this is like the rap version of Twin Peaks. And I'm like, what the heck is a Twin Peaks? And it wasn't until like a year or two later I had the time, and I went back and watched Twin Peaks, and this show came out in the early 90s, and it blew me away. I'm like, whoa, this is easily one of the best things I've ever seen. And you can see why it influenced Atlanta. So, you know, you talking with somebody and saying, yo, you haven't seen Atlanta, that's okay, because it's a timeless show, and it's going to reach people.
It's going to
reach people. The themes are timeless. You know, a lot of the stuff that they're talking about is topical at the time. Like, they might be, it's kind of like the Boondocks in a way, where they might be making fun or satirizing black culture, but the themes are still like, I personally think they're transcending across whatever year it was speaking to. And so, nah, man, Atlanta is like the bar, I think, for a lot of people that came after that show.
Do you think because when the shows like that pop, do you think it's almost unfair to expect that level from every production that someone gets an opportunity that just so happens to look like a black person? You think that's unfair? Well, because it's such a high quality that Insecure and all of the all the producers and directors I mentioned, it's so high up there. It's like, can we get like a Adam Sandler? No offense, but even though he's good, like, do you see what I'm saying? Yeah. Like,
nah, yeah, I feel you, man. Yeah, no, I definitely think black people should be allowed to be, I think what you're saying is mediocre or okay or redundant or whatever the case may be, right? Like, yeah, we should have that space as well, because, you know, I don't want to make this too much of a black and white thing, but
you're good. It's not a
big deal. Yeah, if you're making a comparison of who's dominated the industry, they've had plenty of opportunities to make mistakes. And that's the thing about being a black artist, sometimes you feel like you have to be perfect or you're never going to get another shot.
Yeah.
So I think there's two sides to the coin. We should have opportunity to make mistakes or to fail or to, that wasn't the best thing, you know, try again. But at the same time, I do think we should also be allowed to criticize our art. That's the thing, because at a certain point, some people might say, okay, don't say the criticism out loud or we may not get another shot. And I think that's silly, you know, like, of course, you should be able to verbalize whatever you feel about art, because otherwise, why are we doing it? And so, yeah, it's tough, you know, because we don't get as many opportunities. And I don't expect everything to be Atlanta level or Insecure level or whatever the case. But I do expect, and it's because of what I expect out of myself, for someone to be as singular in what they're trying to make as possible. And whatever that is, you'll make your own thing. You know, it'll be, you'll create your own bar because you're, you know, you're telling whatever your story is or whatever your voice is. I think the thing with a lot of shows like that, they inspire a lot of copycat artists.
Who, yes.
Or even think about, I'm not going to name the show, but remember when Us came out, Jordan Peele? Like, there's a lot of horror from creators of color has felt very Jordan Peele inspired.
Yeah.
To a fault. To a point where I'm like, you don't even have your own voice. There was a show that came out on Amazon Prime, which shall remain nameless.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I was about to say it.
I know it.
So, yeah, it was scary. It was bad. So yeah.
That's where I'm like, okay, you're going to, not only are you going to copy them, but you're not even going to get close to their standards that they set.
Yeah.
That's whack. You know, you got to just do your own thing. You know, it should be like hip hop in the 90s where it's a flagrant foul if you were trying to copy somebody's style.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
you
or
be inspired, but eventually have to take your own thing with it, do your own thing with it.
You could tell, like, you could tell the difference between a 50 Cent and, you know, a LL Cool J or a Run DMC. Like, you could identify, oh, that's LL, or like, that's 50, that's Drake. I see a lot of similarities in your work to your footprint in music and how music has been impactful on you. Do you think that's, do you think listening to hip hop has helped you in writing lines for scripts and stuff?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, for one, hip-hop is one of, if not my favorite art forms, just because it's a means for expression, particularly, obviously, from the Black community, largely. But people that might be from communities that don't typically get that voice. And so whether it's New Orleans or New York or Detroit or Compton, all of those stories are not only compelling to me, but they serve as a means for somebody to get their story out. And so I view it in the same way. I actually think about my project as albums, because I'm very much a fan of album artists yeah. that really care about their albums. Mm-hmm. And so I view each project that I work on, especially if it's my voice in particular, I view that as like an album, and I care about my albums. And so I think about concept albums or just albums that are really well made and how much detail goes into a single, you know, a single bar or a single chorus or bridge or something like that. And so I try to do the same thing with my work. And of course I'm inspired just by writing, because I think writing, great writing, transcends the medium, right? A poem, a 16 bar verse from a great lyricist, a screenplay, a novel, all of that, you know it when you see great writing. And so since hip hop is one of the main art forms I listen to, that is very influential. But I'm mainly listening to it at this point, not only just for like to listen to good music, but from a lot of the writers, I'm listening to it to see how they're approaching it. Because again, everyone has their own way of going about it. Kendrick is going to do it differently than Mavi, who's going to do it differently from Tyler, the Creator, who's going to do it differently from Hov, who's going to do it differently from Nas. You know, it's going to do it differently from Chase Royale. And so I try to think about it like that and think about, okay, I'm going to write different than Shonda Rhimes, who's going to write different from Quinto, who's going to write different from Donald Glover. But each of that, all of it's inspiring for me. And I just try to, again, take what I'm inspired by and, you know, put my spin on it.
I like Tyler, the Creator, the Thinker. You know, I think it would be wrong of me to be like, I love his music, because a lot of it I don't understand, but I know it. I know it's quality. Mm-hmm. But him, the Thinker, I think is brilliant. Him, the artist talking about the art form is awesome. You know, I like listening to artists express that. I know you're a Drake fan, right? What did you think of For All the Dogs, and what's your thought on the album so far?
Man, I'll be honest, man. I was a huge Drake fan when I was younger. Like, I would say, from So Far Gone up until Nothing Was the Same, I was a fan. Like, didn't listen to his music objectively. I'm just like, he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Since then, I'm still a really big Drake fan. But I don't get as much from his albums. I still think he's an amazing musician, an amazing songwriter. I don't think anyone can say that. And he's got a, I mean, he's a genius. He truly is a genius. But for me, at this point, I do wish sometimes he made took a different approach to the way he made his albums. And so For All the Dogs didn't really scratch that itch for me personally, even though there's a lot of good songs. It felt closer to something like a More Life, right? I love More Life. More Life is what, 20-something songs? But again, he categorized it as a playlist versus something like Views, where Views was kind of maligned when it came out. People try to act like it wasn't good, but I think Views is close to a classic or a classic. And even though people might not think it's the greatest Drake album, I just liked it as a body of work and a statement. And I wish For All the Dogs was a little bit more of that. And so, I don't think For All the Dogs scratched that itch for me as an album, but there's a lot of, I mean, like Polar Opposites, BBL Interlude, Virginia Beach, there's a lot of songs I'm going to return to for sure. And Drake's just such a good artist. But as an album, as a body of work, it's, personally, for me, it's not one of his best.
Yeah. I think I agree. I think.
What'd you think about it? Yeah, let me hear your thoughts.
So, for one, I'm not going to lie. This has probably been one of the albums I connected with the best in a long time with him. Just because, but the sounds and the feelings, the maybe because I'm a dog. I'm just kidding. no, but I can see why people felt that way. They, you know, they want him to take risks, and then some people get upset when he doesn't take risks. And then, you know, it's still there. Like, he still got
the
juice.
What do you think of Honestly Nevermind? That's what I'm curious. What do you think of Honestly Nevermind, the dance album that came out last year?
So that grew on me. I've been on vacation a lot, so
okay.
That album makes sense in its proper place. Like, I'm not gonna play it. See, Drake's smart because that album is where music is right now. So like, you get a more like the Thames kind of sound. Million. Yeah, like you getting a lot of that sound, but it just depends on the pocket. Really, it depends on the DJ. It depends on the group and what you want, the vibe you want to get people to feel. But Drake has songs for everything. He has songs for everything. So everything. You're if you got that itch, he got something for you. A little scratch, maybe a little bit, not a big one. But but his hard hitting stuff is gonna live forever. But I wasn't as hard on this album, but my expectation of him wasn't, you know, to exceed some of his best work. I think that's unfair. But you know, I don't like the shots I hear this. People had to talk to me about this. I was talking to Bema Williams about it, and he was saying, like, you know, Drake taking shots at black women isn't cool, but he takes shots at all women. But I think that's just him.
That was kind of lame. I'm not gonna hold you. Like, it is getting a little weird on that end.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, why are you doing that, bro? But, I mean,
I think he's, I don't know. I don't know, man. Every artist has that thing. You're just like, why you got it? You don't need to do that. Maybe it's because he can't keep them some way. You can't keep them for long periods of time. So that's why. It's probably some hurt there too that he needs to address. But I've been listening to Drake. I've listened to Offset. I think Offset has a really good solo album. I like Take the Van Out song, or Out the Van. That song is really dope.
I haven't been blown away by an album this year. I will admit that. Like, just there hasn't been an album that's really stuck to my ribs. There's been good albums, really, even really good albums, close to great albums, but it hasn't been a year where one or two or three albums have really stuck to my ribs yet.
Have you heard Naomi Sharon's album?
Man. Nah, I gotta get hip. Who is that?
That's she's one of Drake's artists, and she's newer, not new-ish to the game, but she sounds like Sade. Beautiful. Oh my, like,
okay,
yeah, like, you gotta check her out. I've been listening to her. She's amazing. Beautiful. Sounds like, sure, I've been playing her a lot.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I want to hear what you have to say.
No, the last thing I was gonna say was, actually, Daniel Caesar put out probably my favorite album of the year.
Oh, wow, really? What's your favorite song on there?
Probably Always, man. It feels like a good throwback, like 50s or 60s Motown jam or something like that. Always, that's my joint.
Okay, yeah, I'm gonna check that out.
Check it out, bro.
So I read, and I've heard you say this a couple of times, about feeling, you know, imposter syndrome. And I wanted to ask you, is it possible that's a good thing? It could it be a healthy thing to feel that way? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Let me think about this one for a second. It could be. It could be, but it also could be paralyzing, right? I think some people, imposter syndrome might make them insecure, no pun intended, and keep them on their toes. Like, I shouldn't even be here. I got to work 10 times harder, right? At the same time, you could have imposter syndrome and think too lowly of yourself and not give it your best shot, or just straight up quit, right? And so it depends, A, on the person, and B, how you're using it. If you're using it as fuel, it's probably going to keep you sharp until you don't feel it. And I think personally, I fell in the former camp of that. Yeah, I've used it as fuel because I felt it. And one thing that was helpful for me was knowing that the people I look up to in the industry have probably felt imposter syndrome, unless you're just a straight up genius out the gate. You know, there's maybe some people like that, but a lot of people had to struggle to find their own voice or felt like, dang, should I be in this room? Should I be here? Until they knew they should be in the room. And so for me, maybe I'm not quite at the commanding yes point, but I do feel really good about the stuff that I'm making. And for the most part, I know I put the I put the work in. Not even for the most part, I put the work in. It's more so about doing it on bigger stages and things like that. And so, yeah, imposter syndrome is natural and it's healthy. It's just about how you are approaching it and how you are letting it dictate how you how you go about things. And so, I think if it becomes crippling and paralyzing, then it maybe probably isn't the best thing. But you know, I wouldn't know how to get over it other than
should you make peace with it? Should you make peace with it to do the thing, or should you keep trying to hone that? And it, and eventually it forms into confidence, right?
I mean, it's different because there might be, was it the dudes that directed Everything Everywhere All at Once? That won Best Picture last year. It was considered by a lot of people the best movie of the year.
What'd you think? Come on, be honest.
I loved it. It was a mind-blowing movie. I only brought it up not to judge the movie, but the director, there was two directors of it. One of them was on stage nervous, and he was saying he didn't know if he deserved it. And I mean, because I get it, he's in the room with other great directors. And so for him to make, to co-direct and co-write one of the best movies of the 21st century, objectively, in terms of like, the amount of Oscars and stuff that it won, and for him to have imposter syndrome, I can't, who am I to say it's not necessarily a thing that can, you know, like you should just shed it away, because it works for some people. I don't know how he internalizes it on a day to day, but he clearly had it on that day, and he's, you know, a great filmmaker. So it's different for everybody. I think for me, if I thought about it too long or just let it become too paralyzed, and I wouldn't get anything done. So I have it, and I still have it in moments. It's just, it's less. It's way less. Like when you first doing it, it's your every moment is like, what am I even doing? I can, you know. And it's not until, for me, I'm a person that, like, if I know I put the work into something, I trust in it, and eventually those feelings subside a little bit. And it helps when other people tell you, hey, you got something here. So, but yeah, it's different. It's a case by case basis, and yeah. So there might be some people that they have it still, and you know, they deal with it on their own terms, but they still have it, and they're well into their career, and they've done great, but they just still have it. And I think maybe that comes down to more to who you are. If you're more, you know, in, of a person that likes to be a little bit more self deprecating, I don't know. It's different for everybody.
Yeah, I think that was beautiful, and I like that you were unafraid to talk about it. That's why I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, man. A lot of us have it, especially when you're doing, it's like, to your point, because I know you're doing this podcast on your own, right? Like you're your own engineer, you're editing it by yourself. You're the only host, if I'm not mistaken, or you got people to help.
No, it's just your boy.
Yeah. So like, bro, it was the same thing when I made Monday. Monday started out as a podcast. I did have a co-editor, but other than that, I wore every single hat. And one, you feel overwhelmed, but two, you don't even feel like you're doing it to the standard of the stuff that inspired you. But you got to think, you're doing it all yourself. When you get to a lot of those people at that level, they have so much help.
So good.
So it's natural, man. It's natural to, but because you're putting so much into it, and then as I'm sure you're probably coming to terms where you start to realize, hey, I've got something here, because if either other people have reached out, or you're starting to grow your following, or you just have listened to your growth across episodes. Right, how many episodes have you done? I think I listened to your last episode just to get a feel for it. I think you said it was like you're up to like 40 or something episodes.
Yeah, right? this one will probably be 43-ish.
43, right. Yeah. So if you listen to episode 2 versus episode 41 or 42, I'm sure you can see a substantial amount of growth, right? Like, yeah, is that fair to assume?
I appreciate you listening. Like what'd you think? What'd you think of it?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I thought it was really good, man. I think you're a really good interviewer, and you're thoughtful. You're thoughtful with your words, which I really appreciate, because, you know, people's time is, attention is the biggest currency today. And so when someone chooses to consume something, I think about that. I want to be, as an artist, as respectful of your time and give it my best shot. And I can tell when I listen to your episode, I think you were interviewing a Division I women's basketball player. You were just so thoughtful in not only your introduction, but the questions you were asking her. And so I just appreciated that so much, because I appreciate people who respect other people's time. Mm-hmm. Because we all got so much going on. And so, like, I could tell you really care about the craft of being a good personality and really building up a compelling podcast. And so, yeah, man, you know, someone who, I didn't have to say this, but, like, yeah, I listened to it and I thought it was great. And I'm sure you can listen to that episode and listen to episode 1 or 2 and see a substantial amount of growth. So I think sometimes also just putting the work in and whatever it is you're doing, that tends to shed a lot of that imposter syndrome, too.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I was going for that because I know that would connect with people, and people will see your work and they don't feel none of that. You know, they see confidence, beautiful art, great jokes, great lines, you know, sometimes people can get that confused with that you don't struggle internally, or that you don't know what things you want to put out for the viewer to consume. So
Again, not to use all, but a lot of us struggle with it. Personally, I do struggle with it, and I did struggle with it more. It became a either or thing for me. Either I let this consume me, or I let the regret of not putting out the work consume me.
Damn,
and that
so
second
good.
Thing of the regret of not putting out the work would be way more damaging.
Yeah.
I don't want to have regret, and I don't want to not express myself. So I have to express myself as an artist. And so the imposter syndrome, the fear, it's also fear too. Sometimes you'll make this something, but like, I'm scared to put this out. That is more, I can live with that more than not putting out work or not expressing myself. That is what's really keeping me up at night, really what gnaws at me. So,
man,
you gotta
Richie,
think which one could you live with?
Richie,
you know?
Man, I don't want people to miss that, because that had a lot of juice. The thing you're probably the most scared to put out is probably what you should, because it has the most juice.
Yeah.
It has the most juice.
Yeah,
it has the most you in it.
Opposite side of fear. I also got that from and that's another thing I love about hip hop, bro, because I get so many gems from hip hop. I literally would like hear a lyric and just send it to myself so I can like put it in my notes because they're such good life jams. And one of my favorite lyrics, since Joey Badass was on Chance the Rapper song, actually, Highs and Lows, he said the best things in life are on the opposite side of fear. And I just remind myself of that as much as possible, man.
So true.
Yo, artists are our rappers are our poet laureate for the time. I fully believe that.
So good.
They can somehow crystallize what we feel and say it in a poetic way, you know, to a groove. And so, yeah, man, I try to live my life by that, bro.
Do you want to?
I'm happy you took something out of that.
I was also looking, and you're working on a film, High Audacity.
Yeah.
Can you? I know you can't talk much about it, but how close are you to getting to that point where it's like, yeah, we about to drop this month? Like,
man, we wrote it already. Again, I co-wrote it with Sherwin. He's going to direct it. Lean is going to star in the main role. I'm going to be co-starring in it. And, you know, we've got everything underway. We've got our crew. We started to raise some money, but we want to film some stuff first just to get our legs underneath us.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the rollout's going to happen, and then things are just going to go. So right now we're still in pre-production and we're building things out. We're getting things underway. But once the announcement comes, it's full steam ahead. And so, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, top of 2024, we are in production, or we at least know when we're going to be in production. Right now, you know, we're still building everything out.
Okay.
Because I think for us, we just want to build things out to where there's no roadblocks, no missteps once we do start production.
So can I, let me ask you this. When the movie comes out, would you mind coming back and talking about it? Maybe bringing some of the cast or something.
Absolutely.
I would love that.
Yeah. For sure, man. For sure. I got you, dog. I got you. Please do reach out when it comes out. And even, you know, if another project comes out before it, I would love to, you know, have a conversation.
Listen, you can come on True Tone anytime and do that.
Let me,
this is my last question. Let me ask you this. For any actor, you're a director, you're a writer, you understand the many facets of the table, which is entertainment visually, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you gauge and let an actor give that character life, but also in the blueprint of what you were looking for as a director and writer?
I think, as a lot of the times the person that created the story, I do want the story to be as close to like how I pictured it as possible, but you don't want to get in the way of another artist's process, right? Mm-hmm. So if there's somebody that likes to kind of freestyle it, you might just see what they have there, right? And so I think I saw this in another interview that I've been trying to live by. That was Jordan Peele, I think. He said he'll do one where it's like do it by the book and then do it how you were thinking about it, right? So you'll have both takes, right?
So, good.
And you can choose in the cutting room. And so I think that's one thing as an artist that I know how much I care about my art, but I'm on one side of the table. And I'm also, you know, I act a little bit as well. So I also know as an actor, I'm going to approach everything differently in that way too. So when I'm working with actors, I don't want to necessarily get in the way of their process. A lot of the times they're going to ask you questions like, oh, how's this? Or how are you thinking about it? And you might have a conversation or you might, you know, be like, hey, this is how I'm thinking about it. And they'll try it out that way. But it just depends on the actor themselves. If there's somebody that just wants full direction or some actors want to be collaborative. And I think as the writer, the showrunner, the director, you have to be open to that, in my opinion, to get the highest level of collaboration. Otherwise, you know, it's just going to be do it this way, do it that way. And, you know, the work might be a little uninspired in that way. So I would say just depends on the artist and just have conversations, open up, talk about the character from both perspectives. And then a lot of the times the art will reflect that.
Richie, you know, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is an understatement. Exactly. You know, I think sky's the limit for you. And I hope you take that in honest honor. And, you know, you're really, really talented. Where do you want people to connect with you? Where do you want people to reach out? Would you mind sharing that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm largely, I was going to say X, but I don't really do anything on X. I just retweet like stuff, but I have the same at on Instagram and on X, which is Richie, my first name, R-I-C-H-I-E, and then the three letters P-B-M. So yeah, Richie P-B-M, or you just type in Richie Campstream. I'm pretty sure it'll come up on both networks. And yeah, you can follow Mondays and Night School, you know, if we return with those shows on IG. Mondays is M-N-D-A-Z-E show. So Monday show on IG, Night School show on IG. And yeah, just keep up with us there. You know, we're always working. I'm sure a page will come out for High Odyssey, you know, whenever that movie gets underway. But yeah, y'all be on the lookout and keep up with us there. And you know, don't be afraid to reach out if anyone's out there listening and potentially wants to collaborate.
I love that. Hey, Richie, thank you for joining the show. I can't wait to see what you do next, man. Thank you.
Appreciate you, brother. Have a great day.
And there you have it, folks. Richie Campstream. He has a beautiful name. It sounds like an anime character. Very cool guy. As you can tell, creative, director, artist, actor. Like he does it all. He has such a ecliptic book full of goodies. And I can't wait to see where he goes with it. Go check him out. Look him up. It was such an honor to have him on the show. He's doing a lot of cool stuff. And he's an even better conversation. So there you have it. And as always, was there truth to this conversation or was it just noise? I'll let you decide. Amante Hall on IG, truetonepod@gmail.com. We out of here, baby.
Do 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 do